IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everyone, to the big 75th episode of the Killing It Podcast.
So we got 75.
We're all wearing diamonds and just, I think it's diamond.
We are appropriately bedazzled.
Right, but we're having a jubilee here. So
exactly, and you all listening to this in the audio version can just imagine that.
We look sharp, just so you know. Yeah, exactly. Cool. So here we are. It has been actually super fun. It's gone very, very quickly. So
I will say legitimately, for as long as the last month, 2 months, 6 months have been in the real world, the year plus that it's taken us to get to 75 episodes has blazed on by. Honestly, the one thing that we assumed would be true when we got started with this was you will literally never run out of fascinating topics to discuss and really passionate opinions about them. We have a backlog of topics.
Exactly. There's always something to talk about.
Yeah, we were just talking. No, we got to do that one next week.
And I certainly hope the listeners feel the same way that I do about like preparing. I actually actively always look forward to this time, like riffing and thinking out loud at times, and because it is a fun way to think through ideas, and you guys get to sometimes hear that in real time.
Oh, and just this is a side note, but Dave, you've passed the 1 year mark for Business of Tech, right?
We're coming up on that. Like I am legitimately a podcaster.
It's any minute now. So
it's an actual thing.
So when people ask you, what do you do, Dave? Do you say, I am a podcaster?
I actually, depending on how far you are from our space, that is generally the answer. I do if you're not in technology, I generally go, yeah, I make podcasts.
And I am a podcaster comes with some pretty stringent requirements for hairstyles and facial hair and creative shoes and things like that. So just got to make sure you understand what you're getting into.
I think I was doing all that stuff before I started podcasting.
Alrighty, let's do a show.
Let's do a show.
Topic number one, I thought, 75th episode, this would be a good time for us to revisit an old topic, which is, we sort of started out this podcast talking about all the cool new super technology that's coming, AR, VR, blockchain, robotics, so forth and so on. So I thought, why don't we take a look at CompTIA? Dave sits on the Emerging Technology Board and say, okay, let's look at the latest and greatest version of CompTIA's Emerging Technology Top 10 list. And we'll put the link, obviously, on the site. But number one is AI. And I got to say, I think that is exactly where it belongs, because AI is exploding for the good guys, the bad guys.
It's funny because I'm not sure how much it's emerging anymore. I think it's
here.
We're productizing at this point. Like I think it's here. I don't necessarily think it's emerging. I think it's a thing. I won't necessarily say it's mainstream or fully mature, but I think we're definitely at the point where it is being productized. I mean, literally as we're recording this, the big announcement yesterday was that Roomba was putting AI into their vacuums to make them smarter.
Like, well, it is about time.
Well, exactly. The thing doesn't know where to go. But there's this element of like, okay, we're actually productizing this. We are taking something that, and maybe we simplify it. And in times, the fantasy idea of what AI is versus what it actually is in reality is the disjoint more than, because a lot of people think it's Skynet or HAL 9000 when we talk about AI. It isn't necessarily. It is around the idea of algorithms that parse and apply knowledge. Well, yeah, we're doing that in all kinds of really smart ways. I think it's productized.
Well, and what I think is the meaningful distinction between, last week we discussed the hype curve of all of the different the different AI subcategories that are out there, explainable and et cetera, right? What they are looking at is things in 5 to 10 years, which, while fascinating to all of us technology people, is not commercial for you as our audience. You cannot actually do things. Where the CompTIA list is squarely focused on emerging technologies that the channel can actually get paid for.
Right?
So with that distinction in mind, Dave, you are 100% correct on that. AI is not fantasy. AI is nowhere near fully mature, but it is squarely in the space that vendors and distributors and solution providers of all stripes had better be paying attention and figuring out ways to productize that in your own portfolio, because that stuff is here, precisely as number two on the list is 5G. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, when somebody said 5G, we were like, whatever, yawn, it'll get here, the fifth of never. And yet it is now here. It is not fully realized. But if you are not making plans for that in your product and service portfolio, you are now officially being left behind.
And it's so, the same for IoT, by the way, too. You say even number three, it's the same sort of thing. It's like there's enough instances of actual devices doing real work that it's like, yes, this is a thing you can go make money on.
So these things are emerging in the sense that they're blowing up fast enough that we can you know, make money on them. But they're also, they need to be mature enough that you can actually get somebody to pay attention to you. Because if you go out and you say, oh, I need you to buy IoT, nobody cares. But if you go out and you say, I can manage your entire warehouse, you know, for whatever, $10,000 a month, and people are like, really? Like, yeah, I can control all the temperatures and secure the doors and monitor the cameras and da 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 da. At least you got something that people want, because feature, nobody cares about. How do I make money deploying this to my clients?
And I would argue, Carl, I think that's one of the most important lessons we have experienced in the last 75 episodes. Categories of emerging capabilities are meaningless beyond the concept stage. But the problems that these things can tangibly solve in the real world, that's what somebody will actually pay you for, right? If you say blockchain, I go, okay, I got a lot of opinions about that stuff. I have many different things about that I think, but I do not believe that anybody is going to pay you for blockchain. I believe that blockchain will become relevant and meaningful when you can say, and here is a way that we can use this in the agriculture business, in the healthcare right. business, in the pharmaceutical business.
Well, our friend Jeff Ponce, you know, he's developed this entire system for keeping track of all the telecom contracts. And, you know, they divide up 100 pennies by 100 times and sometimes by 300 times. And they got to keep exact notes about all of that. And everybody's got to get paid on time and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's created a blockchain, a company that what it does is manage those payments, right? And it's always up to date and you don't have to run the report once a month. It just works. So that's cool. I'm a little like, for me, this list, which by the way, let's just go through the rest. Serverless technology, biometrics, AR, VR, blockchain, robotics, natural language processing, and quantum computing. I think there's a couple of things I personally would not have on the list, like quantum computing.
Oh, I was funny. I was going to totally pick on that one. It's like the bottom three are the ones where it's like, definitely natural language processing and quantum computing for me are like a little questionable. It's like, right. I'm not sure I can make money off of those right now. I'm keeping an eye on them. Don't get me wrong.
It's a someday thing. I don't know that it's a top 10 you can make money to date.
Right. And especially because quantum computing, I can kind of pick on and go, does it really exist? Yeah.
in a physics white paper somewhere in a university, yes. In a product, no.
Yeah, yeah. So I personally would keep the drones on the list above quantum computing and maybe natural language, but the natural language processing, that to Dave's, you know, love of voice commands, right? That's what that's about. It's not something that I can sell yet.
See, right? But I do think there are a number of like opportunities to high five each other and ourselves for being early on these things that are now just emerging. Cause I, right where you said voice as the UI, that's been a Dave priority since right. The very first episode of this program. And it continues to be now trying to add some intelligence to that. Robotics is a category that has expanded to take over drones and autonomous vehicles, as well as industrial devices and then robotic process automation, right, as a category. We were very much early on that topic, and it's something that I think we can continue to get a lot more mileage out of. I think robotics is the one where it ends on the list of you can actually sell a product and a service specifically focused on that one right now.
Yeah, it's almost like you want to divide this list into maybe three categories, and the bottom ones are kind of like, I put them in the, like, just out of focus, right?
Yep, exactly. Well, and just out of focus is still good. It's still interesting. It's fascinating. Well, but you are going to get paid for biometric systems.
And you need to know what's just out of focus. You need to know, like, what am I going to do when that gets here?
Yeah, it's funny, Carl, because I will pick on drones for a moment and go, I think that's pretty established. Like, I think the reason it's not on the list is that they are commercialized and not emergent.
So, what percentage of our listeners are making money on drones?
Oh, not very many, because I think the use cases are specific. But I would also say that those are, the ones that are using it are able to do it with, like, fully formed real products.
I still don't have a burrito yet. So I
still think it's a burrito.
The emerging category. So that one still qualifies for me. But what I will say is this is where the channel adds value, right? Whether you are a manufacturer taking this to market, whether you are a distributor aggregating these things or a solution provider implementing or maintaining these things, our value proposition is we take concepts and we make them tangible. And if you are not doing that with this list of emerging technologies, well, then you are innovating on yesterday's platforms, right? This is where you're going to get paid and where you're going to win new opportunities. And by the way, the one that just was the slam dunk for me on this list was number 4, serverless computing. Everybody within the sound of my voice in one way or another gets paid for selling boxes we call servers. And those things are going entirely virtual. Serverless right. means you better be figuring out new tricks to get paid.
I sort of feel like that should be on the list, although it's super well established. Like, oh my God. I'll just call out the sleeper and then we can move on. I think biometrics is something a lot of us have been making money on for a long time, and that's going to explode and into our businesses, I would say, easily within the next year. So.
Oh, yeah. Especially in a COVID world, you better be able to do identity and temperature and in a biometrics world.
All righty. So topic number 2.
Topic number 2 is one that I will say we are coming back to this topic, and we will continue to come back to this topic, because nothing that involves the courts happens quickly, obviously. But I think this is tangible progress just in a week. So for those of you who have heard of us discuss the Epic versus Apple, and you do have to be careful about that, right? The Epic Apple battle is not nearly as descriptive as it needs to be. Epic Fortnite versus Apple. Last week we discussed this in the context of the way that Epic is trying to bring new channels to market by selling directly within the app, bypassing the Apple App Store policies and the Apple Pay architecture. So they did that, and then they went to court. And in a way that I was absolutely flabbergasted by, a court actually rendered an opinion in a week. Like, A, that never happens. And B, they did that Solomon thing and just split the baby, right? Like, what they said was Epic essentially had 2 complaints. Number 1 was, you can't kick us out. And number 2 was, you cannot de-support our development engine. And what the court said was, you are correct. You may not de-support that development engine because many companies, it's an entire ecosystem by itself, and very many companies would be, not of their own volition, affected by Apple de-supporting their Unreal engine that they use. So I get that, right? The place where Epic got slapped down a little bit, though, was, hey, you're the one who introduced channel conflict here. You're the one who said you wanted to sell direct as well as through the platform. If that gets you kicked out, that is a consequence largely of your own making. And I was like, wow, a voice of reason in the court, in a technology world.
To be fair, they moved quickly because it was an emergency injunction. So there's an actual premise for that to happen.
So you can't give them credit for being quick.
Right. So what was interesting, what I will say is Ryan, it's fascinating to me to think about the channel lens. And I think you've done a really good job of putting that hat on, because I'm looking at it purely from the, like, you know, like watching big players duke it out, one of whom I think does have something of a duopoly stranglehold on a market, but I don't think we've done a great job of defining the market. So as this goes through the court system, it's going to get defined. And that's the bit that's interesting for me to look at, but I've loved your thinking about this from a channel strategy perspective.
Well, and this is the thing, right? Whenever you as a manufacturer sell through a channel, when you choose to sell through another competing channel to the same end users, people who do what we do for a living have a term for that. It's called channel conflict. And you may do that voluntarily. It is entirely open for you to use that as a strategy. But you will reap the whirlwind, because when you come through me as a solution provider and say, hey, I want access to your end users, but I don't want to pay you for that, my answer is, cool, you can totally do that, and I will introduce your competitor to my end user.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, is that this whole concept of the channel, you know, Apple brings you both the tool for distributing your products, your services, and the audience, right? They are the 800-pound gorilla. You only got a couple of places where you can put your stuff up, Android and Apple, and, you know, you got to develop for both. You know, and so if you decide to switch, you need to be a little, I don't know, I wouldn't even say more careful, but you need to be more strategic than this, to just pull the plug and say, hey, you know what, we should just keep a bunch of this money for ourselves. Well, you got into this game by your own choice. And, you know, there is a consequence to getting out of the game or to changing it.
But that is the interesting argument, is because the game was built by a very large player that now has a complete hold on the entire game system. And so how big is so big that the rules are just, they are just dominating and can control the whole rule? That's the interesting angle.
And it's so interesting, because what Ryan was talking about is that the other half of the decision was, you've built this big engine. It's sort of the gamer's equivalent of the PDF format. You can't now, you know, take that away from all those other people who have built stuff based on your stuff. I mean, in that sense, Fortnite is the Apple within that community. And so there, with great power goes great responsibility.
See, and this is the thing, right? The only reason it is an issue is that it is wildly successful. If Apple sold a few licenses, if they occasionally brought you a subscriber, you wouldn't really quibble about how much you paid them in margin, because it's whatever. It's a piece of your go-to-market strategy. When Apple really wins and they are your go-to-market strategy, now you feel like that is the case of the man keeping you down, right? Like, oh, they're preventing me from realizing my full potential. Only because they've been so successful at causing your actual potential. If they were not successful, you would not be complaining about them. Seems a little bit upside down for us to go back and say, okay, Apple, you've been far too successful selling my product.
Last week, we talked about how this is analogous to a salesperson. Would you pay a salesperson 30% of profit? And which is pretty normal. But then what happens? Lots of companies do this. They limit how much money their salespeople can make. Oh, you're making too many sales. You're making too much money. We're writing really big checks to you. We're going to change the commission structure so you make less money just because that number's gotten so big. That's very analogous to what's going on here. Like, oh, we're so successful that Apple now represents a huge piece of where that flow of money goes. I won't even say it's our money because it's not our money until they're done.
Anytime your rationale for a business decision is, I feel like that guy's making too much money, you should probably be very careful about that because markets are really efficient at paying you what you are worth. And if you are getting paid more than I am doing the same thing, that's because the market thinks that you are more valuable, and arguing with the market is a pretty quick way to get a bloody nose, right? You're not going to get there. I translate this right down to the street. If I am really good at what I do as a managed service provider, I can say the very same thing about my end users that Apple says about theirs in the Fortnite conversation. I own that relationship. I control their technology platform. I decide what is compatible and not compatible. I make the implementations. I am issuing the bills. You, as a manufacturer, do not know who my end users are. You do not get to control versioning updates. You do not get to do these things because, I mean, we've all grown up in the discipline and the religion of operational maturity. We want standardization. We want control of the stack. The only difference between me as a managed service provider and you as Apple is that you're way more successful than I am.
I'm struggling in real time for everyone. Because I look at this and I say I cannot get over the idea that somehow in here this feels like they have leveraged a position of power to limit the market from responding. And it may be that the Epic battle is not a great one to define that problem, but I do believe that at some level they have limited the market in the ability to create these, you know, competitive apps. For example, and they're playing the rules differently. They play the rules differently, for example, in this for gaming than they did in video streaming or they do in other areas. And so I'm looking at this going, something doesn't smell right to this. In principle, I agree with the thought on sales. I agree with paying your salespeople. I believe in those kinds of ideas, but something isn't adding up, and I'm looking forward to more of this playing out as the argument gets debated, because I feel it's not that simple. Like, there's something more to this particular case.
We will revisit this, but you know, I just remind you that there was a time when Apple wasn't in the music industry and they were the underdog and they decided to get into it. So, you know, the roles have switched a little bit, but it's the same company.
And Epic did just announce today that they have confirmed that the next season of Fortnite will not be on iOS or Mac. And so they're not kidding and they're not backing down. We will be back to this topic.
Well, we shall see.
We shall see. I think it'll happen, but we'll see how long.
All right.
But moving on then, in our life after the pandemic, we're going to be a bit of a segue stretch here, everybody, for segment three, because this is more one of those areas of technologies that I have to laugh ago. I've been interested in because I've been saying it's been needed for like 2 years. And as we're recording this, in the span of sort of 48 hours, we went from zero offerings to two offerings. So I wanted to bring this up. We're recording this on the Wednesday of the week before this came out. I'll cover this more in depth on Business of Tech as I talk to the companies a little bit more. But there's been announcements in the area of SaaS management. Two companies, Augment and SaaS Alert, have both come out focused on the managed services provider space and are offering technology solutions for managing and discovering and alerting on all of those SaaS applications that are out there. And so I wanted to sort of, before, because we're not going to be in a position to dive into the specific product offerings, and that's not why you come to this show anyway. I think what we wanted to talk about was our perceptions of why this is an actual space to watch and why this is important. And I'll sort of throw it out and say, like, look, if we've been talking about going to the cloud and managing all the cloud and all the servers that are going away and all that, well, ultimately, we do not have tools to give us insights into what's happening in these environments as service providers, particularly focused on the SMB. And now we've gone from zero to two options. So at least they've identified the space.
So what's interesting is I remember you, Dave, making a presentation one time about discovering how many pieces of software were being used in a company that you were with. And everybody was a little like, whoa, wait a minute. we're not controlling this. Like, what's going on here? Is this something that you think MSPs will actually be able to make money on or just use to help manage clients?
So it's interesting you bring that up because I distinctly think that this is something they use to manage clients. I think you kind of always look at this and say, does the end customer care about this? And the answer right. is, in my mind, no. They expect you to do this. They do not care what kind of hammer you use to build your house. They do not care what kind of saws you use. You just need to have good ones in order to create a good house. And so I think this is the same sort of thing. This is a tool in your toolbox that you need, but I do not think this is something that the end customer cares about, nor if they're telling you, oh, you're going to go take this and sell to your customer. No, you're not. That's not how this is going to go.
Well, I'll take it kind of a slightly different direction. I think you can get paid for this for three reasons, right? Number one is this represents in its purest form the most effective selling technique that we've ever used in the telecommunications space. Show me your monthly bill. I will audit all of the charges. I will tell you which things are dead circuits or unused devices, oversubscribed capacity, et cetera. And I will take what you are currently paying. And if you switch over to me, I will save you X amount of dollars. Just show me your invoice. I'll go through it line by line. I will save you money. That's why you should sign up with me. That's absolutely one of the value propositions that they're talking about, is the over-provisioning of cloud services. I think that you can use this as a way to get paid, also as a competitive account penetration strategy, meaning, do you have any clue what's actually going on in your environment? And if you do not, if I can go out there and discover Skunkworks or shadow IT going on in your environment that you are not presently aware of or in control of, that presents tremendous risk on your security profile. I can come in and solve that problem for you. But the cream on this, where I think there's real opportunity, we have said many times, and I continue to beat this drum because I'm very passionate about it. We need to move up the stack. Right. As technology providers, we just agreed a few minutes ago that serverless computing is a very real thing. And if all you do is get paid to monitor and manage servers, the water is draining out of your bathtub right now.
Well, the interesting thing is, so when you talk about me going in and sort of doing an audit like I would with the phone lines, that's cool, except I don't sell half the stuff that any of the clients are using. So the way that I would make money, it seems to me, is the business conversation. To every quarter, go in and say, let's talk about what's being used and where your money is going and all of that. Because if I'm not selling, you know, whether it's a Salesforce or something else, I'm just helping the client spend their money more efficiently. That's 100% a business conversation, not a technology conversation.
Right. But it sounds like a virtual CIO conversation, of which I think most of this audience gets paid for.
And Ryan, by the way, I 100% agree with everything you said, but I would say, like, we're not saying different things. What I'm saying is like, I could offer that service by, I don't know, sitting there with the bills. Like, I don't actually need a tool to do it. Like, and you don't differentiate by going into Mr. Customer and go, I have this cool tool that'll do it. No, you're delivering you're delivering an important service that they want. If I'm using, you know, a regular hammer or the super cool jet powered hammer, they don't care, right? I'm able to slam nails into the wall very efficiently. That means I can do this job well. I could do it craftsman-like by doing it by hand. And either way, it's the same value. They do not care about the tools you use to deliver that service, yet the service is intensely powerful.
Which in the exact same way as like an RMM, right?
Right.
Oh, I don't care which one you use. I just care that my devices stay up and running. What's the layer that I think is interesting is APM, Application Performance Management. Do not just rectify my provisioning. Do not just right size my bill. If you can make it so that the user experience in Office 365 is better, if you can make it so that when I put things into, you name a file, sync and share platform, whatever, that when I put the file in there, it doesn't suck as a user experience because it goes faster, I will absolutely pay you money for that as an enhancement on a continuous managed service. I think it's the performance management in the cloud that becomes new.
Will we see these companies at the shows if there is ever another live show in our space?
So I'm going to go with, oh God, absolutely, because they're all managed by channel people who are going to like totally think, oh, I've got to go to every single show. Like it's 100%. We're going to totally see it that way.
And Dave totally means that in a very positive way because we really want to get back to the events.
Right. So this is launch week, but we will, even if you have no idea what we're talking about, you will see these companies. They will be in our space.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. And look, it is, they've stepped into a space that I don't know, said 5 years ago was needed as a space. So, you know, welcome to the party. That doesn't mean that it's bad. It just means that like, it's about time. Like, woohoo, somebody's moved into
the
space.
And I mean, again, like to borrow like a platform translation, right? The reason that virtual desktop struggled was that without a broadband connection, the user experience on a virtual desktop was trash. It was just way too slow. Double click on an icon and the file eventually opens, right? I think that is where we are right now with a purely SaaS environment. If you have all your apps in the cloud, double click on stuff, you tell me as soon as that Excel file opens, right? Like it's gonna be a minute. And if you could eliminate that for me, well, hey, that's back into our sweet spot. That's what we do, optimize performance.
All righty. That, I think, brings us to the end. Thank you all for listening. This has been episode 75 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.